You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, happy Wednesday. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about the Indiana Pacers 5 days a week. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News and over at 8 points, 9 seconds. Today, we're going to talk about the loss to the Los Angeles Clippers from last night, as well as Tyreke Evans having a fantastic game for the first time in forever. And I might have a slight reason why. I don't know. But we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the game. And then that was game 72, and Victor Oladipo got injured in his 36th game of the year. So Vic has played exactly half of the games this year. So now we can go through and look at how the team does with and without him a little bit more, since they have the same sample size, which is fun. So we'll do a little bit of that. But let's start with all the action tonight, as the Clippers won. The final score was 115-109, and it was kind of a game of runs. First quarter, Pacers were playing well for first 3 to 5 minutes, and then Clippers jumped out to a pretty big lead. Then the Pacers cut it back. Then the Clippers grew it again. Then it was closer by halftime. Then a huge Clippers run over the whole third got it up to like 17 or 18. Then a huge Pacers run got it down to like 3, and then the Clippers held on to win. The Clippers led for the last probably 45 minutes of this game, 44 minutes of the game, but the Pacers kept getting really, you know, they dent it really hard, and they just couldn't quite get it back. They didn't quite have enough firepower to make it happen. And again, I mean, we have to keep harping on it because it just can't happen. First quarter, offense was nowhere to be found. 16 total points in the first quarter. Nobody could make a thing. The defense was okay, but nobody could shoot the ball offensively. And another, you know, actually okay shooting night, but they just couldn't get anything going. They couldn't get to the line, nothing. And then they finally figured out the offense just in time to turn off the defense and then give up 64 over the next two quarters. And some of that is the Clippers did really well with their guards. Lou Williams had a really, really nice game. He only shows that, I mean, you're not going to believe me, he was 4-14, but he had 9 assists, and his dribble penetration was huge for the Clippers off the bench. He was really good for them. And then they got a lot from Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I might have said that wrong. Including a very clutch bucket, but their guards just tore apart the Pacers for the better part of two quarters. In the second and third, Patrick Beverley was hitting his outside shot. 40% of his threes went in. So they were able to get going with all their guards, and that was tough for the Pacers because I thought that was going to be an area where the Pacers could do well. They do have, I thought they had spear guards, but a big thing that I completely have glossed over so far, which is kind of ridiculous, I apologize. Darren Collison was hurt and did not play in this game. They started Corey Joseph and had Tyreke Evans play pretty big minutes. I think he was the second most guard minutes on the team. I'll talk more about that later. But Holiday only got 13 minutes, and Joseph got 20. And Joseph, you know, I thought with Collison playing, Joseph could match up well with some of their bench guards and be a good spot minutes guy, but with Joseph having to work so hard against the starters, and he struggled again in general on offense this game. 3 turnovers. Turnovers were a big problem, by the way. We'll get to that in a minute. He just couldn't be out there. His offense wasn't enough for this first unit in the same way Collison's is, and they really missed that in this game. It's not like he played bad. He just doesn't fit the same mold that Collison does, obviously, and they needed his offense and didn't get it. So we got a fun one, courtesy of Mark Monteith. Let me go find it. There it is. Here it is. Fun stuff. And talking about ball security. So the Pacers ended with 20 turnovers in this game. Just brutal. They had 13 or 14 at halftime. I can't remember. They only averaged 13.8 a game. So they did a terrible, terrible job taking care of the ball. So they shot over 50% from the field. They shot 51.7%. That's fantastic. They shot 70% from the line. That's not great, but whatever. They were passing well. They met their, you know, they have a team goal. I thought it was 35 assists, but Mark is obviously around them more than I do, and he said it's 30. He said they met their goal of 30 assists. They won the rebounding battle 46-39, so pretty handily. And yet they lost because they coughed the ball up so many freaking times, especially in the first half. 20 turnovers, completely careless. Four of them coming from Corey Joseph, three from Tyreek, two from Domas, three from McDermott, which he doesn't have the ball a whole lot, so that's kind of crazy from him. Four from Bojan. They just couldn't take care of the ball, and that's your game right there, because the Pacers did at least decent to better in pretty much every area of the game. And they had guys shooting pretty efficiently. They only had one guy shooting below 41%, which was Aaron Holiday. They had a bunch of guys over 50, which is how, you know, this is the laziest analysis ever. But, like, sometimes when they stink it up on offense, it's like only one guy played above how he usually shoots on offense. They had a lot of guys do that. They just turned it over so much that it didn't matter how well they were shooting or, you know, how effective their defense was for stretches of the game. They just weren't going to come back. They didn't have enough possessions to get it done. Their fourth quarter, they almost came back, though, when they finally did put some clamps on and take care of the ball. Tyreek Evans was huge in the fourth. He was the motor of the team. He was getting to the rim pretty well. He had two nice pull-ups in the first quarter, and he was distributing. He finished with 19 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, possibly his best game of the year. I think San Antonio might be his best, but that one is close. And then Sabonis killed at 16 rebounds. He was battling with Montrezl Harrell all night. So the bench was able to scrap enough, but the starters not able to get it done against the Clipper starters, which actually surprises me. I thought that the starters would have an advantage. In terms of good performances, Bojan had 19 points. So his turnovers were up, but he was scoring well. Turner finished with 11 and 5. He was just okay. He had 2 blocks and 1 possession, 5 total. So his defense was still solid. And Zubac kind of struggled around the basket in this one to even get shots up. He finished 4 of 6 from the field, but he couldn't really do much in terms of having a strong impact. And then, as I already talked about Kojo, McDermott was able to get going, too. He was the team's tie for first. He was really the third leading scorer with 17 points, but he got 12 shots up, which for McDermott is a huge deal. But they were hunting for him. That's why he had more turnovers than over. You can really see it there. So they had some good performances. They just coughed the ball up so much, especially early on, that they couldn't keep themselves in it. And then they cut it to 3, and Lou Will, pretty much, he already had it won, but cemented his sixth man of the year over Sabonis with a beautiful jumper to put the Clippers up 5 with about 40 seconds to go. So, you know, the Pacers are on a back-to-back. The Clippers are probably better in terms of the roster in a sans-Vic era. So it's not a surprise they lost. It's just when you have a horrible quarter, like that third quarter, or like the offense in that first quarter and the defense in that third quarter, and you're still right in it at the end. It's just like it feels like you should have had the game. So I'm sure the Pacers will be disappointed in that one. They rarely lose 3 in a row, and now they might lose 4 in a row because Golden State's coming up Thursday. We'll preview that game tomorrow. But that was a game. It was just a game. It wasn't a tough one because the expectations are lower on back-to-backs, but I did think they had a pretty good chance to win. So in that way, maybe it is disappointing. But let's move on and talk about how Reek was able to be effective, because I have a small theory. So stick around and let's talk about it. So rightfully so, a lot of ripping on Reek recently because he's really struggled since the break. And then tonight, I read a stat line off earlier, but 9 for 16 for 19 points. Only 1 3-point attempt, and he was still able to have it a pretty efficient line. And he missed 2 free throws. And he's dishing out assists. He had 7 of them. The 8 rebounds were a nice touch. He had high turnovers, but he had the ball so much that it was just felt like normal turnovers. So Reek's a rhythm guy, and he played 29 minutes. So that's going to help him just by default. He was also finishing much better than he usually does when he was getting to the rim. My thought, though, and I wanted to look into this, was I think Reek played so well because he was the point guard. He didn't have to start possessions away from the ball and, like, run a play and be, you know, in a position he doesn't want to, or exerting effort on something that isn't necessarily his forte. It's just he's taking it up the floor. So the lineup they had, shout out to Nick Barker for pointing this out. I like noticed but didn't think of it as being like a cool or unique thing. But they had a huge group out there. It was Tyreek, Wes Matthews, Bojan, McDermott, and Sabonis. And then eventually, soon after, they got Thad in there for McDermott. Either way, all 6'6 or taller guys, which when you have when you have a good ball handler like Evans in there who's that tall, you can really throw out a huge group to try to throw off the other team. And the Clippers play with these 3 guard groups that are kind of awkward and ball handily. So going with this huge group seemed like a good idea, and it was. It worked really well. And Tyreek was the point guard of that group. So there's two possibilities here. One is that the group being huge, but still having the spacing with all the shooting and Sabonis being the role man, like that's probably the ideal lineup you can get around Tyreek Evans. You have a great screener who can free him up pretty much whenever you want. Sabonis is one of, if not the best screener in the NBA. And then three guys who, just by spotting up, are going to give you an extra foot or two of room to do what you're doing. You know, he had some possessions where he'd dribble across half court. This happened two or three times to my memory. And he just blew by his defender. No one was there to help. Like, nobody was ready to step up. And some of that's that he was being a willing distributor. Some of that's the shooting prowess of a lot of the guys around him. But that lineup was really good for him. And it's not that he was less effective. He just, his effectiveness changed when they went to Thad. And it is what it is. He was still the best option. He should have been out there. But it just changed a little bit. So I wanted to look and see if it had something to do with that group, if it had something to do with him being the point guard and the usage being higher. This is the first time ever. That was the first run ever where he played. He was on the court without one of Collison, Joseph, or Aaron Holiday. He has 30 minutes with just Holiday, and offensive rating is basically one in those instances. With just Corey Joseph, he's got almost 700 minutes, and it's pretty good offensive rating. That's just the usual second unit. That's just the usual second unit that kills teams. So there is some fit there. And then with just EC, let me resort the old stat sheet. With just Darren Collison, still pretty good offensive rating in about 350 minutes. Well, the Pacers do just score pretty well in general when Tyreek's out there, which is so weird because he himself does not score well. But this was really good for him. And I want to look into more of this and do a deep dive on these big lineups, because I think that is like a new wrinkle that they could really harness in the playoffs, because it worked really well. The Clippers are the worst team to match up for because they have a bunch of small dudes, but they could just get a lot of good looks, and they had a burst level that seems unexpected from guys that height. And Matthews was actually dribble driving pretty well in this game. I was pretty impressed with Matthews' ability to get to the rim. He usually is a guy who's going to one dribble right and then fly behind the line. So they were able to get penetration with that group, which is something they can't normally do. And McDermott was doing everything in this game like that. That's not normally a lineup that I would think would work, but it was able to in this game because of Tyreek doing so well and breaking down the D with his dribble penetration. So credit to him for stepping up and having a big game, because, I mean, a lot of hope was lost, rightfully so, on him. And a lot of people wanted to play Holiday over him. Collison's injury allowed Holiday to play some without, but play in the same game as him. So it was good to see Tyreek succeed and Holiday play, which Holiday was not very good. I didn't talk about him, but not a big deal. He only played 13 minutes. Some development time and inconsequential, although he was a plus nine. But Tyreek being good is a big deal, because if that's a thing in the playoffs, that changes a lot, that they have a bench player who can do that. And I don't want to say, one game, okay, he's going to be good in the playoffs, because he's had good games this season, and an overwhelming majority of his games are bad games. But they might have found something that works and lets him be as good as he can be, or as good as he was last year. And I think that's a big deal. So keep an eye on that going forward. We'll have to see what happens. Thank you guys. Oh, I'm not done. Wow, I for some reason thought I was done, and I was going to thank you for listening. I want to talk about the Victor Oladipo stuff. He's played in half the games now officially, so we can dive into some fun stuff with him. Let's do that. Let's talk about the half the season with Vic and the half season without Vic. Hey guys, I've been telling you a lot about places you can go have fun for March Madness recently. Here's another one. DraftKings. I know you all hear about DraftKings for your DFS needs, but they're doing something awesome this year. DraftKings, one of the leaders in fantasy sports, has a free bracket with tens of thousands of dollars up for grabs. Everybody can fill one out during the tourney. Might as well do it on the award-winning DraftKings app. For tons of free prizes, they're doing their first ever thing called Bracket Battle this year. You can win up to $60,000 in it. And you should obviously bet my incredibly brilliant Final Four of Kansas, Tennessee, Duke, and Michigan. You know how brackets work, though. I'm going to be wrong. You're going to be right. But that's all there is to it. You just sign up and do a bracket. Fill it out before the first game. You pick the winner every game, every round. That's it. There's no entry fee. You can play for free. Sorry, there might be a fee. But you can play for free if you use the code DRIBBLE, D-R-I-B-B-L-E. That'll let them know that you came over from the Locked On Network. You can even set up a private group for you and your friends to compete for bragging rights. I will definitely do that. So what you need to do, download the DraftKings app or go to DraftKings.com now. Use that code DRIBBLE at the Battle Bracket Challenge for a free chance to compete for your share of $60,000. That's Dribble at DraftKings or on the DraftKings app or DraftKings.com. So Victor Oladipo's played 36 games this year. The Pacers without Victor Oladipo have played 36 games this year. They are at 44 wins, and their record with Vic, surprisingly, is much better than their record without Vic. It's not a secret at all. They are 25-11 in the 36 games in which he plays. If you want to do some quick math, that is 57 win pace, 56.9. In the games he does not play, they are 19-17, which is a 43 win pace, a little over 43, but got to do some rounding. So Victor Oladipo is quite a big swing on how well this team does. So whipping up some quick numbers here beyond that, because I mean this game was another one where I felt like they just needed him. You know, they go on the dry spell in offense in the first, they needed his scoring. In the fourth, they were struggling to get stops. They needed a good on-ball defender, and a pretty good on-the-ball defender in the pick and roll would have been super helpful against the Williams. And they just needed him this game. And the fact that it made it the halfway point made it a good time to go back and dig stuff up. So in games in which Victor Oladipo plays, the Pacers have scored over 3,900 points on just over 3,500 possessions. Good for an offensive rating of 111. In games he does not play, I should have done this all before, but I had the site that I use for filtering, I just use one tab before I run the show. And then I try to change it all while I'm typing, and it's a lot easier when I have Adam here to do it with me. Much harder on my own because I have to stall like this while I get it up. Okay, their offensive rating is 2.5 points better just in games that Oladipo plays in. That's not that's not him on the floor. That's in games he does play, which is big deal. Like, some of that's him being on the floor and being a positive effect on the offense because he's a good basketball player, obviously. And some of that's the whole rotation. You know, you got Tyreek in there. You don't have any rookies in there to clog you down. And I think that's, you know, very telling, especially as they go through the stretch where they've had game after game of one portion of the game where they just cannot, for the life of them, stop the other team or score on the other team. It's annoying that they're also staggering stretches. It's very rare they're at the same time, except for that Bucks game. But they need a guy who can help make that not happen. And on the other end, pretty similar story. I mean, another not surprising thing because Victor Oladipo is such a good defender. But in games he does not play, their defensive rating is 107, which is good. But I mean, think about how good the Pacers have been this season on the defensive end of the floor. Like all year, people have been, oh, that, you know, they're second in D with this massively good, whatever defensive rating, 104-ish. You know, in the games that he's not playing, it's much higher than that. It's 107. Meanwhile, in the games he does play, I am now typing, and I'm doing a terrible job of typing. I also just messed up a number, so now I have to delete a bunch of stuff. In games he does play, under 106, 105.9 defensive rating, so another about 2-point swing. So just him playing in the game, not on-off stuff, or like him playing actually on the floor versus him not on the floor. Like the whole game is like almost a 4-point per 100 possession or 5-point per 100 possession swing. Just him being there. And that's like a huge deal. That's like a 12-win deal. That's what we figured out at the beginning with 57-win pace versus 43. That's actually a 14-win deal. Man, my math is terrible today. Anyway, I just think it's crazy to see now in retrospect what kind of impact he really has had on this team. And some of this, too, is like off-court influence. You know, even in games he plays, like when he's not playing, he's helping you by being right by you and it being the vet. He's a captain of the team and, you know, pepping guys up. It's like it's a big thing for the young guys to hear that. I know I hear all the time about Aaron and Ed been talking about, like, Thad giving the team a pep talk or Wes Matthews taking them aside. Vic could also be that guy that helps. You know, he just does so many things that help the team. And I think seeing the halfway point, seeing what we're actually missing with him on this team is very interesting and very telling. So that is all I've got for you guys. Thank you so much for listening now that I'm actually done talking to you. Tomorrow, a much more alert Tony will be talking since it won't be 2 in the morning after a basketball game. Thank you guys so much for listening and have a great rest of your day.